It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. It is so great that you are hanging with us this weekend. Delightful. Lots going on. I do want to point out a few things that are kind of percolating in the financial world that we haven't really talked about because things break all the time. And, you know, I just want to make sure we keep you abreast of what is impacting your financial life. So, you know, while everyone's been glued to these various congressional testimonies, there's been a ton of information about what's going on in the financial regulatory reform world. So, recently, we had a few things transpire in Washington. Number one, the House passed the Financial Choice Act, and that is a bill that would essentially try to gut elements of the Dodd-Frank financial reform legislation of 2010. So the Choice Act would give the president the power to fire the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the head of the FHFA, which oversees Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Basically, he could fire the heads of these organizations at any time for any reason or no reason, just carte blanche. Now, the bill would also allow Congress to pretty much defund the CFPB's budget. Now, remember, the CFPB was created. It came out of Dodd-Frank, born out of Dodd-Frank. It is the only agency that has a sole purpose of putting the consumer first. So that doesn't mean that, you know, there aren't other organizations like the FDIC or the SEC or the OCC, which have consumer elements to what they do in their regulatory jobs. But that's different than having one organization whose sole focus is the consumer. So I'm bummed about this, but we'll see. By the way, the Choice Act would also repeal the Department of Labor's fiduciary rule, the first phase of which went into effect on June 9th. Oh, but wait, it didn't really go into effect June 9th because that rule that would make anybody who handles retirement assets or gives financial advice to retirement savers, it would make them put your interest first, put your best interest first, and to provide disclosure of conflicts when they exist. That rule, which was supposed to go into effect on June 9th, it sort of is, except guess what? It's not going to be enforced. So what the heck are they doing? That means that the vast majority of these people giving or touching your retirement account, they're held to that lesser standard. It's called suitability. So whatever they sell you, it has to be appropriate, but not in your best interest. So you know what? Do yourself a favor and go work with somebody who is a fiduciary, whether it's a retirement account or not. And that is a certified financial planner, right? A CFP has to be putting your needs first. Go to letsmakeaplan.org. Okay. I had to get that off my chest. Is that okay, Mark? Oh, and by the way, I forgot to say that Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, sent down a 149-page slideshow doing essentially many of the things the Choice Act would do, which is, so we now know that the administration wants to roll back a lot of parts of Dodd-Frank. Do you think that's a good idea? Let me know. Maybe you don't. Anyway, give me a call, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Let's start with Ray in Georgia. Hi, Ray. Welcome to Jill on Money. Sorry I had to rant there for a little bit.
No, it's all right. Thank you for having me, Jill.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I appreciate you bringing up the Department of Labor regulations. That's something that our firm is contending with as well. We've put everything into place as of June 9th, and January of 2018 is when things are supposed to go into full effect unless Trump pulls the plug.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, I have a client, and we hold ourselves to this fiduciary standard, but I'm not sure if everybody's going to be following in line with indexed annuities. I was just curious about your opinion on that, because I have someone who is considering that as a rollover of their entire 401k. In my firm, we consider annuities a part of a plan. Up to 35% of your net worth is acceptable going towards that. But I wanted to get your opinion on indexed annuities, how appropriate they are, what their cost is.
So what? So are you a CFP or a financial advisor? Like what's your job?
I'm a financial advisor. Yes.
Uh huh. And so what's your opinion is what about about index annuities? What do you think? You said that would be a part of, but so how do you? What's your view of them, and how do you use them right now?
No, I appreciate that. At our firm, we don't even provide indexed annuities. We determined that they were too expensive and inappropriate to the goals of a client as far as filling that need for a stream of income. We do provide annuities, but they tend to be either fixed or variable.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just curious, in your opinion, you know, what are the pitfalls and upsides of an indexed annuity as opposed to variable or fixed?
Yeah, I mean, I'm more of a fixed annuity person in general, but not so much when interest rates are so low. But, you know, I think that I get a lot of flack because I've been very outspoken against annuities. And I don't think that that is actually fair. What I'm outspoken about is the widespread use of annuities by some insurance agents and some financial advisors who seem to think that an equity indexed annuity is the best thing to do for every single client of theirs. I'm more like you, which is if I'm going to argue in favor of an annuity, I'd say, hey, look, it's great. You have a stream of income. That's good. You get protection of your principal, assuming that the insurance company doesn't go broke. You get some portion of the index gain. But still, there's so many problems with annuities. They're so expensive usually. And even when you get a low-cost one, you're tying up your money. So I think that the fee structure is such that it's very difficult. And the way that they are sold can be so aggressive in some ways. And I try to tell people that, you know, if someone is trying to sell you an annuity, that should put up a yellow flag, a caution. And then you ask yourself, okay, why do I need this? Especially for people who may already have a retirement account. Why are you buying an annuity inside of, say, an IRA rollover account? Like, it sounds like this client of yours would be doing. Doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And I just find that the industry has gotten to a place where in many cases they'll say, oh, you know, you need an annuity. And there's not a good reason why. So I'm not a huge fan of annuities. I like a fixed annuity. I'm happy with honestly, an immediate annuity can be a beautiful way to create some income stream for people. But in general, I'm always very cautious about things that are oversold. So that's my two cents, Ray. And I'm very happy that you called. Give me a chance to do it in a calm way. So I'm not reacting to, you know, some 78-year-old who just bought an index annuity who's just gotten hooked. All right. Thanks for calling. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. And beware those index annuities. We'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks, she covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. I'm Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, senior CFP board ambassador. Mark's running the show. Should I call you like the CFP aspirant or trainee, or he's in the middle of his second module? What's the second one? Oh, insurance. You know how much he loves that. So, not to call anyone out, because you won't know who his teachers are, but Mark had a really lousy teacher in the first segment, and that was, I think, just general principles of financial planning. It's how to do time value calculations is really what it is. And now you're in insurance, and that's good because it's hard to make insurance interesting. So I think if you had to have a rotten professor, the first one was probably the better one to get it over with. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler. Ray in Georgia is a financial advisor. He just gave us a call. And then didn't we have one last week where we had a CFP call ask for advice? So that was for the podcast. Oh, that's for our podcast, Better Off. You want to check out our podcast? Check out our podcast, Better Off. You can get it on Apple Music. We're not allowed to say iTunes anymore. I think they say Apple Music. Check that out, Mark. Double check. I think so, though. Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you get your podcast. YouTube, we have a YouTube channel. Just search Jill Schlesinger. When am I going to get Jill on Money? Where can you search Jill on Money? Oh, he can't. It's something about how many subscribers there are, something like that. Search Jill Schlesinger. Schlesinger, if you are German. That's how you know how to spell it. Okay. 855-411-JILL. That is our phone number. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. If you're in the business, hey, this would be kind of fun, Mark. You know what we should do is we'll get some people in the studio. We should get some advisors, and we could do like an advisor hotline. Maybe we'll do an episode about for just advisors, for CFPs and people who have questions about either dealing with their clients or tough cases. We could be like a study group. I like that idea. He's not finding it that interesting. Let's go talk to James in Connecticut, who's going to rescue me from this line of questioning. Hi, James. Welcome to Jill on Money. What can I do for you?
Hello, Jill. I have a universal whole life insurance policy. Just wondering if I should, one of three things, cash it in, keep it, and still pay the yearly fee or yearly premium. Mm-hmm. And the third one is to just keep it and don't pay the premium.
Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm single, early 60s, no children, currently unemployed, looking for work, though.
Mm, okay.
I do have a rainy day fund I've been living off of.
How much is in there, in the rainy day fund?
I've got about $25,000.
Do you have a retirement account someplace?
Yes, I do.
What do you have?
It's about $100,000, 401k.
Okay. Is that still in the old employer, or did you roll that over?
It's a combination of old employer and rolled over.
Okay. And how much, so how are you surviving besides just, are you doing anything like part-time-ish, or just you just pulling money out of that rainy day fund?
Just pulling money out of the rainy day fund.
How much money is in the whole life policy right now?
I have $26,000.
Okay.
I'm guaranteed 6% a year on it.
Wow. 6% is a nice number, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I don't think I would make... First of all, I would not pay any premiums. There's no reason to do that.
Okay.
Can you take a loan against it?
I could.
Maybe that's... I'm nervous that I don't want to deplete your rainy day fund.
Right.
I think, how much are you taking out of that rainy day fund every month?
About $1,500.
I think maybe what I would do is look into, talk to the insurance agent, talk about whether it makes sense to take a loan against this whole life policy. Not a lot. I mean, if you only need $1,500 a month, I mean, how long have you been out of work?
It's about 8 months, and my insurance agent has passed away. So I talked directly to the insurance
company. Okay, so there's two questions. One is, if I were to cash it out, what's my tax liability? So that's one question to ask the company. And the second question to ask the company is, you know, tell me what the cost is of borrowing money. Maybe you would take, just to get you through the next few months, take a... $6,000 or $7,000 out just to have it. I mean, look, I don't want to just preserve this money for no reason. On the other hand, you may need it. Just may need it. And since, you know, that $100,000, there's two ways to look at it. One is, okay, well, my emergency reserve fund is essentially this life insurance policy, right?
Right.
So what I would want to know before I started pulling any money out of that is, what is my tax liability if I cashed it out, and what are the loan provisions?
If I cash it out, is $12,000 in interest in the...
Okay. And you haven't earned any money this year, right?
Probably a couple hundred dollars.
Hmm. You know, it's a funny thing. On some, if you cashed it out this year, you're in such a low tax bracket that you may not have to pay any tax on it.
Right, right.
So, I'm thinking out loud right now.
That's what I was thinking about too.
You know, like I'm in a quandary, because of course you like to have like a nice high earning account. On the other hand, if you're going to work at, you know, you don't need insurance, right? You don't have any dependents. No one suffers if you were to die prematurely. No one's suffering financially.
Correct.
So that $26,000 is really your money. And the question at this point is, how do you access it? If you access it today before you are, you know, working again, you have a low tax bracket, but you lose your 6% interest. If you access it in the future, either you're going to be working or you're going to be collecting Social Security. In either case, you're going to be in a higher tax bracket than where you are now, which is essentially zero.
Right.
So I think what you may want to do is cash in some of it. Look, where are we? We're in June. I mean, are you close to anything job-wise or not?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Why don't you cash in $5,000, say, and add it to your account? And if by the end of the year you are essentially haven't earned any more money, right, then cash in the rest of it and take your money, and then you will have paid, you know, you'll be in like a zero tax bracket. And you'll have them, you know, there will be no penalty for having gotten out of it. But you need to conserve cash, obviously. So even 6% is great. But, you know, I would do it, just take a few extra $1,000 out right now. Just, you know, like I said, $5,000 or $6,000 out. Add it to your rainy day fund. Keep the rest of the money in there. Let it do what it's going to do. If by the end of the year you don't have a job, I would probably cash it out. And then that's that. And, you know, at some point you're going to have to make a decision that you're going to have to take some job rather than no job. And hopefully that time is, you know, not, it's not like this second, but, you know, look hard for a job. And if you can't find something, you'll figure something out. But in the meantime, you'll have plenty of cash to float you through this period. So good luck. Thank you for calling, James. Remember, everybody, we're talking about life insurance here. The question that I asked was, do you need life insurance, right? Why don't you need it? Why do you need it? You need it because if somebody's relying on you and your income and your assets for their financial security, you need it. But in James' case, don't need it. All right. You're listening to Jill on Money. If you have a financial question, give us a holler. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.
Doesn't matter if you're 25 or 65, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Back to Jill on Money.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler. 855-411-JILL. Or send us an email. So easy. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. All right, let's do some emails. Mark, we are going to have to do that like massive email dump, right? Because we have so many that are piling up. I apologize to anyone who has sent an email and awaiting a response. We're going to do a whole show, essentially. Maybe we'll do three shows? No. All right. Well, we'll figure it out. It'll be like a summer show or three. Okay. Maybe we'll just do like hour, like we'll make hour one all emails for a couple of weeks, and then that'll get us through it. Okay, Jim is from Connecticut. So is married, 59 and a half years old, good health, needs to work until he's 70. Yearly income, 88 grand. I'm stressing over the fact that I've not been able to contribute to my employer's 401k since I began working at my present job 6 years ago. Monthly expenses leave me just 25 or 30 bucks per paycheck. If I participated in the 401k and had the minimum 5% withdrawn each paycheck, I would not have enough money to cover the monthly expenses. So he's got this is interesting. He's got a 15-year mortgage at 2.75%. He's got 11 years to pay it off. He's got an emergency reserve fund of 11 grand. Too low. He does say that he says, through prior employers, I have been able to accumulate money that is presently in a brokerage account worth $411,000. Unfortunately, I'm not able to contribute to that account either. It's also close for me to get another car. Mine is 12 years old. My wife is 57, works part time. Her income's 28 grand. My financial advisor does not recommend bankruptcy or refinancing to a 30-year mortgage, suggested a second job. Please offer comments, suggestions, ask questions. Okay, hold on a second. You have a brokerage account worth $411,000? So I'm presuming, I bet you read this the same way, Mark, that that brokerage account, he did say, it's funny, he said, I've been able to accumulate money that is presently in a brokerage account worth $411,000. I'm reading this as not retirement account. That's how I'm hearing that. So here's what I'm going to tell you to do. Yeah, sure, you want to work two jobs, that's fine. You have 400 grand sitting in an account, man. Take the money. There's no reason why shouldn't you use that money? In fact, if that money has already been taxed, then spend that money and put your 5% into the 401k, get the match. And I would also look into, I actually would look into a 30-year refi, even though your broker doesn't want you to. I would just look at it. There's no reason why you need bankruptcy. Why would you need bankruptcy? How could you apply? There's no bank. You have 400 grand in assets. Okay? So, and you make 88 grand a year. So what I would do is I would use some of my $400,000 that I've accumulated and put money into my retirement account and live off of the $400,000. I bet your financial advisor doesn't want you to do that because that's money that he or she manages. And then that money comes from him or her. This is the problem, by the way, buy a car with the money that's in your $400,000. Stop stressing. You have money. You have $411,000 and you're stressing out. You didn't tell me how much your house is worth, but I bet you got equity in it. But here's the thing. You've done the hard work and you've got some money that's socked away. You're 59 and a half. You're going to work 10 more years. So let's try to be wise about how you spend some of this money. Yes, I would like you to earn more. Yes, I'd like your wife to earn more. But I also don't want to make you nuts. I mean, we've got to actually make sure that you can work for 10 more years. And maybe working a second job is doable, but maybe it's not. Be great maybe if your wife could pick up an extra day or two to help out. The problem, of course, is that 15-year mortgage, which you think, oh, it's so great, it's only 15 years. The problem comes in a situation just like this. We've talked about this on the show so many times, and that is that you have this great mortgage and you can afford it, and then all of a sudden something changes in your life, and now you're stuck with a 15-year mortgage, and it's a higher payment, as opposed to maybe had you gotten a 30-year mortgage, you'd have a little breathing room. So that's why I tend to like 30-year mortgages, because there is a little less pressure. So use that. If I'm wrong, if something is amiss here, then let me know and write us back. But I definitely want to hear that. Okay. Here's a question from Jeff, who has relocated for work. He's got 16 grand in savings, $47,000 in debt, student loans, car payment. Wants to know, should he put all the savings towards paying down debt? Well, I mean, I think that it depends. You never want to have $16,000 go to zero. But if you're telling me you've got $16,000 in addition to your emergency reserve fund, yeah, sure. But if that $16,000 is your emergency reserve fund, no, no. No, don't do that. So you can pay down your highest interest debt first and be sure to leave yourself with at least 6 months in living expenses in the account. That way you have your emergency reserve fund intact. I know it's so tempting to just, you know, say, oh, let me just get rid of this. But I worry about people being without a safety net. Safety nets are good, really. Trust me on that one. You never know. You never know. All right, if you've got a financial question, we want to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send an email. Ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com. Tweet your question at JillOnMoney. Mark, you've been very busy at the Jill on Money Twitter hub. It's his morning routine. Wait till you see what we have planned for you this fall. There's a lot going on in the Jill on Money world. From 5:30 to 7, he scours the universe looking for interesting things for you. And then every so often I pop in and say, oh, but don't forget this. You're listening to Jill on Money, presented by Mark Talercio. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.
It doesn't matter if you're 25 or 65, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Back to Jill on Money.
Go away from my window.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, or you'd like to sing along or sway with Mark to Johnny Cash, give us a holler. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. Ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com. You love that. Is that your favorite Johnny Cash song? No. All right, well, when we do new music in, you know, a few years, you'll... Now that you actually have a real job, you're not as creative with your music. The bump music is lacking. It is my fault. It's true.
But it ain't me, babe. No, 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 it ain't me.
All right, enough with our musical interlude. All right, let's take a call. Susan's on the line from Minnesota. Hi, Susan. Welcome to Jill on Money. What can I do for you?
How are you?
I'm fabulous. What's happening?
I have a trust that I've had for 13 years, and there's about $350,000 in it. And, you know, there was a lot more, but especially the years that the market does not do well, it seems it disappears a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it could go down $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the years that the market performs, it's okay. And I don't know at this point what I should be doing with it.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, Susan. How old are you?
67.
Okay. Are you married?
No.
And is this trust the only asset that you have? Do you have anything else that's out there, like a retirement account?
I have some Social Security.
Uh-huh. And how much?
Only $500 a month.
Oh, okay.
And then I've got my house is paid off, my townhouse. So.
Okay. And how much money do you pull out of this trust every year?
Well, between their fees and everything else, it's about $40,000.
You take $40,000 a year out?
It doesn't all go to me. I mean, it pays my living expenses and my keeps up my house and the bank's fees and a few extra things. That's about it.
And it's held. The trust is held at a bank or a brokerage company.
It's a bank.
It's a bank.
Yeah.
Okay. And as the beneficiary of this trust, I presume you don't really have any say as to who gets to manage it. Is that correct?
I don't, but that doesn't mean to say that I couldn't go to an attorney and change it by going to court or something, maybe.
Well, I don't want you to spend lots of money doing that.
Yeah.
How much is your townhouse worth?
About $240.
Okay, I might be doing math a dumb way, but if $40,000 a year is coming out of this account,
yeah,
and you're 67,
yeah,
how are you not going to run through all the money in this account?
Well, it seems to me I'm going to.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
So you can't take $40,000 a year out of the account.
Yeah, I think that's it.
I think that's really the issue.
Okay.
That, you know, I don't know who's really managing this account on your behalf, but it seems to me that what you really need to do is have a reset. That, you know, this was run in a certain way for a period of time. Now it's time to kind of reassess and say, I'm 67. And I might live for 20, 25 more years, I hope, you know, and be healthy. And what I think's going to have to happen is you're going to have a real tough conversation with yourself, with the person managing the account. And in that conversation, you're going to have to probably reduce the amount of money you are withdrawing from this account to probably half, by half. I mean, I don't see how you can take, you can't have $40,000 a year coming out. You're going to run out of money. You probably are only going to be able to take, you know, $15,000-$20,000 a year out. And if the trustee fees are so onerous that it is going to prevent you from pulling that kind of money out, that's when you need to talk to an attorney. Can't be that the fees are actually eating into the money that you need to live. So I think that's going to have to be a conversation. I don't know exactly how it's invested, but the money should be invested very, very conservatively because you're going to need to pull some of the money out. On the other hand, it can't be in cash because you need to grow it. And in order to grow it, you got to take some risk. So I think the long story short is probably what you know deep down, which is you're going to probably have to make some choices. They're not great choices. I'm sorry. But they, you know, you are fortunate that you do have this money, but you're going to have to reduce the amount of money you're pulling out. There's no doubt. No doubt. And have a conversation about making sure that the allocation is the right allocation for you. Okay? Hope that makes sense. Mark, I'm worried. Yeah, it is. It's a lot. Okay. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
For you, someone to close his heart. Someone to die for you and more. But it ain't me.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, this is the place for you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Hey, Mark, I forgot to tell you this. We're going to have a new thing that CBS is helping me out with. You're going to love this. We're going to let people send us a video question. I don't know how. Bob's going to do it on Facebook. I can't tell you on the air. Bob, who you know at NewsPath. So he's going to help. We just did a mock for this, a mock-up, and you're going to be able to send us a video question. Now, we always can grab the audio, but anyway, the video questions we're going to put on the, you know, Facebook page of like CBS or something. I think it's going to be kind of fun. No? Yeah, why not? We can post them wherever we want. I don't know if we can. I just said that. I'm not exactly sure if we can. But I bet we could. I bet that I could cut a deal with my people. They're going to send me questions. People are going to send questions in. And you, and listen, everybody out there, do you like that idea? On camera, and then we post it. Isn't that cool? So that's how I'd answer it on camera. I would do it like while I'm in the building. It's kind of fun. No, not the same day. Anyway, tell me what you think of that. I don't know. I always feel like I am not such a... This is going to sound crazy for a television person, but I am not so into video. I just feel like radio, spoken word, podcast, all this, it's so much, it's so perfect and conducive to talk about your very, I don't know, like innermost secrets about your financial life. And that's why I like it so much. Anyway, you know, we've got a very incredibly awesome, awesome guest coming up. Diana Henriquez. She is an award-winning financial journalist. She wrote the book Wizard of Lies, which was a New York Times bestseller. Remember that? It was about the Bernie Madoff scandal. She's a few other books because she's like a prolific writer. She also wrote for the New York Times. But can I just tell you that the coolest thing is that HBO just created the Wizard of Lies movie adaptation. And she's going to talk about that, and she's fantastic. And so just stay tuned. Diana Henriquez, author of The Wizard of Lies. Up next here, Jill on Money. You are listening to The Jill on Money Show, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back with Diana.